Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Pro Savings Days are back at Lowe's. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Hello and welcome back to the WTF1 podcast. It is the week of the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, and you are joined by your usual host, myself, Hayden Gullis, and of course, the incredible James Coker, all the way from the USA. And we're going to be breaking down our preview ahead of this weekend's Azerbaijan Grand Prix. Always a difficult circuit, James, but in recent season, it hasn't necessarily provided as much drama as we expect from Baku. Are you excited?
I cannot wait. I also cannot wait to wake up at 3:30 in the morning to watch the race live at 4 a.m. That's what I'm most excited about, is the lack of sleep.
Yeah, it's a 12 noon start for us over here. So, yeah, that is slap
and that's early for you. That's early for
that's
you.
That's early for us, yeah.
Because
yeah,
you are not a morning person, Hayden.
No, I'm really, really not. I'm really, really not. You look at my hair right now. Like, I've just woken up. I get up at about, you know, 5 p.m. We wake up. We're on the same sleeping schedule, despite being on opposite ends of the earth. Okay, it's not that bad. But, yeah, this is earlier compared to what we're used to over in Europe. And it's even only a midday. So, yeah, I can only imagine how you are going to feel.
You know, there's like there's a short story, and we're already getting off on a tangent in the first minute, but there's a short story where the world is so overpopulated that the population is split into day people and night people, and some people only exist in the world at nighttime. And I feel like you would thrive in that environment. You're like, first one to sign up to be a night person right here, Hayden Gullis.
Do you know what? I'd be a bit of both. I don't like staying up and like wasting the day, because I still enjoy the day, right? But I'll happily wake up at 10 a.m. and start my day then. 9 a.m.
You and me both. You and me both, pal. Before I had a kid, yeah. I used to stay up till 2 or 3 and then wake up at 10 or 11. It was the best.
That's me. If Fem's gone away and we're not in the same room and she's over back home, then I am up with the Creator Series content creators up to like 4 a.m. at night playing games, and then waking up for a stream at 10 a.m. regretting everything, but ready to do it again the next day. So yeah, I'd say I'm a bit of a both. I feel like you're very much right now a day person, because yeah, you're literally up at...
I don't have a choice.
Like 8 your time? Yeah, true.
But yeah, I'm typically up at 7:30 or 8 every day, sometimes earlier. So you just love staying up late, talking smack to Adam Sanderson?
Pretty much, yeah, exactly that. And yeah, I'm just enjoying my freedom, and I have the freedom to not feel tired if there is a night race. But obviously, you know, the luxury of being in Europe is that I can watch this race slap bang in the middle of the day, don't have to worry about being tired or waking up too late, or do I go to bed? But no, those are problems that you're going to have to deal with this weekend.
What a treat to be in Europe. It's the New York City of the world. I don't know if you knew that.
Feels like it. It feels very much like it. But Azerbaijan, what's your thoughts on the circuit? Because I feel like it's a lot of people's favorites, and I feel like I'm quite controversial, because I don't think it's not one of my favorites.
I think it's a very pretty circuit. Like, I love that castle looking like tower that they constantly cut to sort of
also known as a castle.
Is that
the
what it's called?
Looking castle.
Well, I love the castle looking castle. I think it's really pretty. I think it's a very beautiful city and a very pretty circuit. You know, the race that I watched last year, I didn't think was very exciting. And I know historically, especially in the last three races, Azerbaijan is known for not having a lot of overtakes. I know you will make the counter argument that overtakes doesn't mean good racing, but We can get a deep dive into Baku a little about a bit later. We can go Baku to Baku in a couple minutes, but we have a few headlines we got to get through first.
We do. The first one coming out, cost cap breaches. Ooh, get the drum roll out, because have any of the teams broken the cost cap for this year? And I can tell you that not a single one has done it. But Honda and Alpine as engine manufacturers have had a few procedural breaches. They haven't gone over the budget in terms of the cost cap for the engine suppliers. It's just procedural. So I imagine that's just they've filed in the wrong paperwork or they put it in the wrong pigeonhole.
You think so?
Yeah, procedural breach, something's gone wrong somewhere, but they can easily fix it because that's just what it sounds like at the moment between the organization that monitors it. It's just, we're working together and we're going to sort of fix. And it's also very first stage of this cost cap era. So I think they're wanting to give them a bit leniency, which, you know, I don't think you should really do, even if it's the first season. If you break it, you break it. But I don't think they've said that they haven't overspent. It's just some procedural issues that hopefully they've sorted out. Unless it's catering. Then, you know, we stand by catering in the F1 world. If they're overspending on catering, that's not good enough.
Yeah, maybe Flavio Briatore is just running up a catering bill because he has expensive tastes. Like, you know, he's like, I want your most...
Always caviar and champagne.
Exactly. He's like, I want your most expensive thing stuffed with your second most expensive thing. And they're like, very well, sir, lobster stuffed with tacos. That's a Simpsons joke. I cannot take credit for that. But yeah, I also think Flavio Briatore is a guy who eats caviar at every meal.
Yeah, caviar, champagne, morning, noon, night, wakes up, has a champagne machine, is there a coffee machine, also known as a bottle, next to his bed. And he's ready and raring to go.
That's what I want to know. If Alpine is in a breach of the cost cap, where is that money going? Because it's definitely not performance on the track.
Yeah, but if it's also, you know, setting up for 2026... They might not even be supplying any engines in 2026 because their one team that they're supplying, Alpine, are rumored to be looking at Mercedes and having some of their engines when Aston Martin go to Honda. So if they're putting all this effort and they're getting it wrong ahead of 2026, they're going to have potentially nothing to show for it if there's no team using their engines.
And you know where Honda is probably breaching the hot cost cap, right? It's
enlighten me.
Sending gifts to curry the favor of Fernando Alonso. They're trying to get on his good side because we know he did not part ways with Honda on the best of terms.
Surely it'd be the other way around, because I feel like Alonso said a lot of bad things about Honda and Honda wouldn't necessarily be happy to work with him again. So he's sending the gifts. But maybe didn't go through import tax and shipping so correctly. So the Honda company on the Japanese side are picking up those expenses.
Maybe they're sending him gift baskets full of Sidra and Jamon Serrano, being like, hey, let's start fresh, Nando.
I like it.
Let's be friends. But like, I don't know, he could still have issues with Honda, especially given how poor the reliability issues were with McLaren when he was back there in 16-17. Like, I think it's 2016, the car had to retire like 10 times due to mechanical failure. Yeah. And I don't think it was that much better in 2017. So maybe Honda is spending a lot of money to wine and dine Fernando Alonso. Who knows? Maybe they're taking him out on the town in Tokyo and they're getting yakitori and ropingi. And then they're going down to the Golden Guy and having drinks in those little bars. And then they're going out for some karaoke.
God, I would love to watch that. I would love to be a fly on the wall. Fernando Alonso getting wined and dined by Honda.
Executives.
And a little bit of karaoke at the end. That'd be incredible.
Yeah.
Drive to Survive next season. Look out for that.
Are you familiar with any of the neighborhoods I just name dropped in Tokyo?
No idea. Which is a surprise because Japan is a place that me and my girlfriend very much want to go to in the future because we're huge Pokemon fans and we're obviously going to take a third suitcase to fill up when we go to all the Pokemon centers over there. But
I love how my wife and I went to Japan for our honeymoon. We were there for 2 weeks. We had a very different trip than you're probably going to have. We didn't do any Pokemon themed tourism.
I'm going to explore the country as well, but There's gonna be it's gonna be on the route.
Okay? We weren't hitting up any of the Poke Gyms on Pokemon Go to battle whoever like the gym leader
all day, every day, mate. All day, every day. I'm gonna be shouting in the corner, Dragonite, and get all the crowds over with me to catch it. Imagine an F1 based Pokemon Go game where you're walking around, you're catching Lance Stroll.
Yeah.
Just throwing balls at Lance, throwing tires at Lance Stroll to try and get him.
You'll be on Pokemon Go with your like phone open, and there'll be Mazepins popping up everywhere, and you're like, I don't want those. I'm not trying to catch those. Get out of here.
That's transfer like, those. Get
them gone. That's the most common of the Pokemon.
It's just all Mazepins. A few Maldonados sprinkled in there. Yeah. Maybe a Sergeant and a Latifi.
Yeah.
And then every now and again, pops up a Fernando Alonso.
It makes sense that those would be the most common one, because when you catch the ball in Pokemon Go, you got to spin it, right?
That was very good. That was
Thank you.
Right, on to the next piece of news, and you're going to have to explain this one, because when I first read this, I thought you put two drivers' names and mashed them together.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They are becoming a company. So you were put down on the agenda.
LVMH,
yeah, also known as Lewis Verstappen, Max Hamilton, as they are put together, could become a major sponsor in Formula One. So they're too tired of being champions, and they're just going to own Formula One now to make sure that they are consistently the top two in the sport. Right, that's what that means.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what that means. No, LVMH, Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy is a parent company. Luxury goods owns a number of brands, including Louis Vuitton, Bulgari, Dior, Fendi, Givenchy, Marc Jacobs, Tiffany, Moët, Veuve Clicquot, Dom Perignon. And I know that Rolex recently left Formula One after a long partnership, being a title partner or major partner for the
timing partner.
Right. And I know there are rumors that Tag Heuer might be coming in to take their place and become the official timer again, which Tag Heuer has been the official timer of Formula One in the past, and Tag Heuer is a LVMH company. So there is the rumor is that Rolex was paying Formula One around $50 million a year. I don't know whether that was euro or dollars or pounds. I forget. But Formula One wanted about three times that for the new fee to be that title partner and official timing partner. And so I think Rolex just decided to walk away. Maybe that's because they feel a lot of Formula One, like while there are a lot of Formula One fans who are in that demographic to buy a Rolex, maybe they just felt like it wasn't worth it anymore. So the rumor is LVMH could become a major sponsor. Maybe they're meeting that quote of $150 million a year. Maybe they're going to plug Tag Heuer in there as well as featuring some of the other brands under the LVMH umbrella. So it will be interesting for sure. But I know you might not be interested in this stuff, but like the business aspect of Formula One is very interesting to me, which is why I included it in the outline.
Well, I'm excited because it means that, you know, we're going to have some really high-end fashion race overalls. The helmets are going to be really out there. We're going to have drivers, instead of, you know, getting into their cars and going to the front for the national anthem, in the middle of all the cars down the grid, we're going to have a catwalk for all of the drivers to show off their race suits and their helmets for each week. So I'm very excited for that.
Are you familiar with the classic, iconic Louis Vuitton leather bag?
Is that the one that's got the LV?
And it's like brown and gold. Could you imagine how uncomfortable it would be if you had a race suit made out of the Louis Vuitton leather? It'd be so stiff.
And they all have to have a bag as well. Exactly. They all have to have a bag they carry around.
Like
with
a little bag
in the car.
A little bag.
Each car has a bag section for the Louis Vuitton bag. Yep.
Like a little bag that they dangle on their arm.
Yeah. Isn't the Monaco trophy, isn't that the box that it comes in? Isn't that a Louis Vuitton bag? It's like a box, not
is
a bag.
Is it?
A
I
box.
Didn't know
it's
that.
Louis Vuitton.
I know
I'm pretty sure the casing for the trophy is a Louis Vuitton.
I know at the Olympics this year in Paris, the medals were presented in boxes that were made by Louis Vuitton. So that would not surprise me okay. if they do a partnership with the Monaco Monte Carlo Grand Prix.
Monaco Trophy Box. Yeah, Louis Vuitton is the travel case for the Monaco trophies.
Wow.
So there you go. So they've already, you know, tested the water and now they're ready to dive right in.
I love that. Speaking of diving right in, you know who's diving into FP1 at the Mexico City Grand Prix?
Someone that we're very both excited for.
I know you are.
I'm sure you are as well, right?
And speaking of diving, his name is Spanish for duck. an animal that spends a lot of time on the water. None other than Hayden's boy, Pato O'Ward.
I am so excited for this. I love Pato O'Ward. Have done ever since he took part in Race of Champions in Mexico. I can't remember what year. I think it was 2018. Yeah, it must have been the 2018 Mexico Race of Champions. And since then, I was like, this guy is an absolute character. I am in love. And yeah, he's been doing incredible in IndyCar. Still, those championships have been eluding him. Obviously, a part of the McLaren Arrow IndyCar team and under the McLaren umbrella as well. And yeah, he's going to get that first run in FP1 this season with McLaren at Mexico City Grand Prix. So I'm very excited. Of course, there's not ever really too much to show from an FP running, but it's just cool to see these characters outside of Formula One getting a chance and getting an opportunity. And, you know, I'm somebody who has recently got and dabbled into IndyCar in the last couple of seasons and would love to see the bridge form between IndyCar and Formula One. And, you know, some drivers coming over to F1 as well as, you know, continuation of drivers going between F1 and going over to IndyCar as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I also wanted to bring up a point where if you follow IndyCar at all, Pato O'Ward's been making a big push for IndyCar to get a race in Mexico for a few years now. And NASCAR just 2 weeks ago announced that they're going to race in Mexico City next year. And Pato O'Ward even offered help to IndyCar to help land a date and a circuit for IndyCar. And I believe the head of IndyCar said something along the lines of, oh, we don't have a big enough star to be a draw in Mexico, which is insane to me because Pato O'Ward is a huge star.
Yeah, and then he went and won the race one of the Milwaukee Mile, didn't he, straight after that. So it was a good sort of like clapback to that statement. Yeah, it's a bit of a shame because I think IndyCar is suffering from international exposure. I know it is very much, you know, an American, you know, motorsport, but I do think that it has the capabilities of reaching outside of the US, and it has started to do so. I think a few people have started to jump on it since Sky Sports have got a bit of the licensing to show the races. And I think people have definitely, as well as F1 getting slightly more boring before this season, it was a great opportunity for people to go and explore other motorsports, and people have definitely found it. And I think Pato O'Ward is one of the big pulls for IndyCar, just like Daniel Ricciardo has been for Formula One. Of course, you know, Daniel Ricciardo is sadly in a bit of the low of his career at the moment, but of course he had those highs in the mid 2010s, towards the end of the 2010s, and I think Pato O'Ward is very much a good replication of that for the rest of the world and bringing up other people into the sport. And I think, you know, a Mexico race would be incredible out there at Mexico City at the Mexico City race. Hermanos Rodriguez, or is that Hermanos Rodriguez?
It's the Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez. Yes,
yeah.
Great circuit. I went there in January for Formula E. It was very very cool.
Is a cool circuit. I feel like they did ruin it slightly with the changes to Formula One made with some of the slower corners. And I'd be interested to see how IndyCar would be around that. Because I can't... Can you see it being an IndyCar circuit? I don't know.
I could see it being an IndyCar circuit. I say, why not? I mean, IndyCar is, in my opinion, the most versatile racing series out there. And so, like, if any series can adapt to any circuit, it's IndyCar. And IndyCar has raced internationally before. They've raced in Japan as well as Australia. Kart, when it was Kart, they raced in England and Germany in the late 90s and 2000s. They've raced in Brazil before. I know IndyCar's big thing is we are a domestic series. We are an American series. At the very least, I would love them to expand to the rest of the continent of North America. I know they race in Toronto, which is a great street circuit. But I think IndyCar needs a race in Mexico, especially with the star power of Pato O'Ward. It just makes so much sense. You ever seen the Pawn Stars meme where he's like, best I can do is this?
Yeah.
So I'm like, IndyCar fans are like, would love to see an international race and maybe some new circuits. And the Pawn Stars guy is like, best I can do is a doubleheader in Milwaukee and mid-Ohio.
Yeah, I think it's definitely lacking that diversity in terms of branching out, but I fully understand why it doesn't. But when you've got such stars like, you know, like Pato O'Ward, I think it's very popular over in Oceania with a lot of Australians and New Zealanders jumping in it. You know, it makes sense of doing a race over there, as well as expanding further and into some of the races in South America too, because, you know, there are some drivers from Brazil who have ventured into IndyCar too, and I think there's great circuits in Brazil that I think, you know, IndyCar would be very, very good at and suited to.
I don't think IndyCar should become a full-blown international racing series, because I think what makes IndyCar special is the fact that it is an American racing series. Mm-hmm. I don't think it should try to be F1. I think it should try to be its own thing, but I would love for it to have, you know, a couple international races a year.
Yeah.
But I don't...
And whether that's just on rotation, I think I can accept that, like having two races a year where they go somewhere else, but those can be on rotation, you know, depending on potentially who are the top drivers who are outside of America,
but I don't
tailoring towards their countries or.
But I don't think it should abandon any of the iconic and staple tracks that are on the schedule now that make IndyCar special. Like, I don't think IndyCar should ever leave Long Beach or Laguna Seca or Mid Ohio. Of course,
Barber Motorsport Park. Love that
Barber
one.
Is such one a cool favorite. Park. I really want to go to Barber. And what's also interesting about Barber is, you know, I believe the attendance is capped at like 30,000. So
okay,
you can't sell more than that many tickets. So like it just feels like a very cool, intimate venue. I would love to go see a race at Barber. Of course, in Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So I think I do think IndyCar has a lot of things they need to change, but they can't change so much that they abandon their core fan base.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I the one thing I think I really like about IndyCar is it is just so, it's just so roots motorsport, if that makes sense, that it is just so basic in a way. Well, there was obviously a lot of complications and the machinery is very complicated, but it's not all this, you know, political stuff that Formula One has and this, you know, just branches out everywhere and it's all so pretty and beautiful looking. You know, I think IndyCar is very much grassroots grounded in that sort of sense and just goes to circuits that they've just basically looked like they've rocked up on the day, set up camp, and it's like go racing the next day. And I love that about motorsport, and I think a lot of fans love that as well.
Totally. Moving on. Ha ha.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
McLaren has essentially stated that while they're going to prioritize Lando Norris, they're still going to let Oscar and Lando race for the remainder of the season. They obviously have the fastest car. Looks like they are going to probably overtake Red Bull in the constructor standings this weekend. Do you feel like this is the right strategy mentality for McLaren to have, or do you feel like they are kind of wishy-washy and they don't exactly know how to handle the current situation?
As a fan, I want them to prioritize Lando, not necessarily as a Lando fan, just as a fan of Formula One, because I think there's a best chance for us having a championship battle at the end of the season. You know, I think they're playing it down very much on the basis of, you know, it's still unrealistic that Lando's going to catch up. Because, yeah, you don't know. Red Bull could come out with some upgrades. I know that they've made a compromise of the three different versions of floor that they've done to Baku to try and make sure those upgrades that they've done across the season don't go to waste. Yes, Red Bull could get back to some good form and Max could start winning, you know, plenty of races again. And, you know, that chance of the Drivers' Championship completely gone. So I understand that they need to prioritize the constructors because they have a really, 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 really good chance of winning that. Like a very, very good chance of winning the Constructors' Championship. So I fully understand why you would prioritize that. But I do think in a situation that they are running close together, they need to prioritize Lando Norris to get as many points as possible. And if they don't get those points, then they can always, if it becomes, you know, he mathematically cannot win the championship with three rounds left to go, cool. Now Oscar Piastri is our priority for the next three races. Lando, we gave you your opportunity. You didn't do it. But now if Oscar's ahead of you, you do not overtake him. You stay behind and you let Oscar have those results.
In response to that, I think Oscar Piastri has just put out a tweet. It said, I understand that without my agreement, McLaren has put out a press release late this afternoon that I am their number two driver. This is wrong, and I have not agreed to any of that bullshit. I will not be driving for Alpine next year.
Very, very good.
Can we talk about just the embarrassment of riches that McLaren has in regards to their drivers? They have such a deep driver lineup beyond Lando and Oscar, who are like, You could argue are the stars of the future for Formula One, and both are probably going to be contending for drivers' championships for years to come as long as they continue to be in a competitive car. Aside from that, you have Gabriel Bortoleto, currently number two in the F2 standings after he championed the previous year. You have Pato O'Ward, who we don't know exactly what he can do in a Formula One car. He has tested before. He's going to test again in Mexico City. Very competitive IndyCar driver. A marketing goldmine. So charismatic. A star in North America, in USA and Mexico and Canada, in IndyCar. And it just goes even deeper. The McLaren has this unbelievable problem where they have so many talented drivers and not enough spots. Like, they're the team right now that should have a junior team, not Red Bull.
Yeah, fully agree. I mean, they've also got two drivers in F3, I believe. I don't know which drivers they are, but I'm pretty sure they have two junior drivers in Formula 3 as well as, of course, Formula Academy, Bianca Bustamante. So they have a huge amount of experience and drivers, as well as their other Arrow McLaren drivers too. They have a lot of drivers, which is, you know, essentially, it is the McLaren way. If anybody's ever watched the history of McLaren or how McLaren were very much at the beginning, Bruce McLaren set up a team, you know, in Formula One, but he had a lot of other, you know, fingers in other pies. He was doing lots of different motor racing around the world as part of the McLaren team, and the prize money that would come back from that would be able to put that into the McLaren team. And that essentially is how McLaren started. And, you know, I think that is, it's great to see McLaren as such a huge brand across all so many motorsports. IndyCar, Formula E, you completely forgot about Formula E, but, you know, they've got two drivers over there as well, Sam Bird, and they've got Luke Browning for this upcoming
Taylor
season.
Taylor Barnard.
So yeah, Luke Browning's the Williams driver who's going into F2 this weekend, replacing Zach O'Sullivan. Yeah, so those two over in Formula E, and they have, you know, IndyCar, and they have Extreme E becoming Extreme H. So you just have places everywhere, as well as the driver in F2, F3 in Formula Academy. So I love to see that from McLaren. And yeah, I mean, but unfortunately for all those drivers, they're looking at Lando and Oscar thinking, these two don't leave, where the hell am I going to go?
Yeah, 100%. So there's this, like there is in Formula One, there's this incredible bottleneck of a very, very deep driver roster.
Yeah, seriously so. And as well on top of that, you know, we will skip past one of the agendas. We'll come back to it, but let's move on as we are you know, talking about this anyway, Gabriel Bortoleto, currently in a fine run of form. You know, he's really picked things up in the latter stages of the F2 championship. Went from last to first in Monza last time out. Wow. And is now one of the front runners for the second seat for the Sauber, Kick Sauber team for 2025. They've got their interest in him at the moment, which I think is huge, you know, overtaking people like Valtteri Bottas and Zhou Guan Yu, who already are in that seat at the moment, giving as much data as possible. Theo Pourchaire, who is still waiting on the wings for a Formula One seat, could be jumped by Gabriel Bortoleto, which is incredible to see. But it just goes to show that if you miss out a season, if the timing's not quite right for you, you could potentially miss out on a Formula One seat, because Gabriel Bortoleto is in the form of his life and other teams want a piece of that.
It's I got a feel for Theo Pourchaire, because it you're exactly right when you say right place, wrong time. Mm-hmm. And in a sliding door situation, if Theo Pourchaire had been a few years younger or one F2 a year or two later, he might be in a Formula One seat right now. So much of these decisions are based off of momentum, but like very recent momentum. It's like, what kind of heat have you been bringing in the last couple months? Not so. What does your resume look like over the last 2-3 years?
Yeah. Yeah, no, fully agree. And it's just, I think Formula One is a very recency bias fan base and sport. Mm-hmm. Because you talk a lot when you debate drivers, et cetera, and it's always just, oh, this is happening now, this is happening now. And people forget, you know, Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez winning the Bahrain Grand Prix by 20 seconds, a gap between the first and second, feels like years ago. Like, it does feel like years ago, so I completely understand it. But it's just a case of being at the right place at the right time, and Bortoleto is certainly doing so. And you've made a point there about the grid. Is it getting younger? Is it getting too young at this stage? And I just feel like it's very much similar to 2019 when we had Russell, Lando, and Alex Albon all come in. You know, we're having quite a lot of juniors come in, which is great, especially after not really injecting that in the previous season of 23. But then those drivers have to be able to perform and be able to swim. If not, then there's a load of new youngsters ready to take their spots.
Right. But if these rumors are true and Gabriel Bortoleto does end up getting that second seat at Sauber, we'll have four very young rookies in Formula mm-hmm. One next year. Jack Doohan, Ollie Bearman, Kimi Antonelli, Gabriel Bortoleto. It's going to drop that average age of a Formula One driver significantly.
I mean, if Alonso retires at any point, which it doesn't sound like he's doing anytime soon from the press conferences, that average age will drop massively. Him and Lewis Hamilton, if they just go next season, do you know what? We've had enough. We're going to go on holiday together. We've made up, right, and we're going on holiday together. And that average age would shoot to like 27, I feel like.
Right. But still, the average age of rookies is always going to be high as long as Fernando Alonso is driving in Formula One. Right. Speaking of Lewis Hamilton's interested in purchasing a MotoGP team. I know, like, in the past, he's expressed interest in maybe riding in MotoGP. I know he's a big MotoGP fan.
Yes.
So,
he did a car swap once with, car bike swap with Rossi.
Right.
Once upon a time. There was a feature on Sky. So Rossi drove one of his Mercedes and he rode a MotoGP.
And Rossi's a great driver. Bike. Rossi drove in 24 Hour of Le Mans this year in the GT3 category, correct?
Yeah. He's jumped recently in the last couple of seasons into GT driving, into the Fanatec GT World Championship, I believe. Yeah, he's obviously made that jump. Just going to show that if you're motorsport born and bred, then you know you can go and fight in whatever category you want. You might not always be the best jumping from different categories, but you can always be fighting, you know, in a competitive state.
Have you ever seen the movie Predator with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
I haven't seen that one. No,
are you familiar?
I've only seen Alien versus Predator.
Okay, so you're familiar with the character Predator.
Yes.
In the movie, Arnold Schwarzenegger says, "If it bleeds, we can kill it." I believe for a lot of these drivers, it's, "If it has wheels, we can drive it."
Yeah. Or ride it.
Or ride it if it's a bike.
Be careful, because those bikes fans, they will come for you. If you call A MotoGP rider, a driver. Oh, you just signed your death wish.
You know what, Hayden? I've never watched a MotoGP race in my life, and I am not ready to. You know, I deal with enough trolls in the motorsport space. I'm not ready to expose myself to the trolls in the MotoGP space.
I'm also in a very similar boat that I've never really watched it. My girlfriend works on social media around the MotoGP world now. So I sort of glance over to every now and again. There was a final round of the Red Bull Rookies Cup last weekend. It was actually a very enjoyable race, a championship battle that came literally right down to the final corner. And it is exciting because you've got a lot very close together and a lot of battles going on, and it is very, very intense. But I think it is quite hard to get into if you're so car-based. It's hard to learn about the knowledge of two wheels compared to four. At least I've struggled quite a lot to be like, right, what is going on here?
I think for me, it just has to do with the limited amount of time and energy and bandwidth I have to follow sports. I follow Formula One the most. I follow IndyCar second, even though I love IndyCar. Then Formula E, because I worked Formula E this year, and that was very exciting to follow and attend. And then I try to follow WEC as much as I can, especially the 24-hour of Le Mans. And then, like, I don't really have the time to follow anything else.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm very similar. I've got Formula One's main. Then I've got, you know, I say F2, F3, and IndyCar are all on very similar similar wavelengths because, you know, they're all on usually similar weekends to Formula One.
Yeah.
So that's usually, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, it was literally a whole full motorsport day. Woke up, watched an F3 race, then an F2 race. Then I did a race on stream, and then I watched the F1 race, and then I watched the IndyCar race. So it was just a full day of racing that I've never really dipped into WEC because it's just something I've never found the time to jump into. Formula E, again, is something that I haven't found the time to watch many races of. It's just the few here and there, and very much similar with MotoGP.
WEC is very exciting, and I think the best way to approach it, and maybe some fans will not agree with what I'm saying, but in regards to the 24-hour of Le Mans, I did not sit in front of a monitor and just watch the race for 24 hours straight. I would dip in and out because, you know, I have a life, I have a kid, I have stuff going on. So I think I watched like the first 2 hours or so intently. And then for most of the remainder of the day, I had my headphones on and it on my phone. And I had the broadcast on my headphones, and it's as if I was listening to it on the radio.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like taking my kid to like swim class or taking him to a birthday party, and in the car, I had it playing through like the radio on my car. And then I think I would, that night when it was time to wind down before bed, I watched it for another hour, and then I woke up and I watched it the last like 2 or 3 hours intently. So I think if you sort of plan out how you're going to follow it and not think of it, oh, I have to sit in front of a screen for 24 hours, 12 hours, 6 hours, it's a much more enjoyable way to consume it.
Yeah, I think it's a good way to approach getting into most motorsports for the first time as well. Either you can just go, do you know what, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to enjoy, I'm going to watch the full thing. Or you can jump in, because I know Indy 500, for example, is a jumping in point for a lot of people with IndyCar.
Yeah.
Because it's the big event. Okay, what is it going to be? And I think sometimes I do feel like it's the wrong one to jump into, because I think there's a lot of other great races that IndyCar has to provide as well. With the Indy 500, at least when I've experienced it, this year was very, very exciting and a lot was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But it is something that you can kind of put on in the background, watch it, but you can happily do other things at the same time, work on your laptop, work on a computer. And then when you hear there's a dramatic moment, you turn around, watch what's going on, come back. You know, after those pace cars come in, have a little tune in. Those last 15, 20 laps, that's usually when I feel like your full attention should be on the IndyCar race for sure. If you're new and you're trying to work out what this series is all about.
Also, I think the Indy 500 is a longer race typically than some of the other IndyCar races. I feel like some of the other IndyCar races are in like the 2 to 3 hour range, where IndyCar is Indy 500. The Indy 500 is like 3 hours plus, depending on whether cautions, et cetera, et cetera. And I agree with you. And also the build up to the Indy 500, there's like 2 weeks building up to it. There's like there's like nine practice sessions. There's a full week essentially of qualifying. And then once they have the top 30 set for qualifying, so you have like regular qualifying and then you have the fast 12 and then you have the fast six. And then the three cars that didn't make it in the top 30 or the three plus cars that didn't make it into the top 30 have the elimination qualification round. So let's say 35 cars decide to try to qualify. This year was 34. You had four cars go into last chance qualifying and one of them was eliminated. And so there's just like, there's so much that goes into the build up to the Indy 500.
Yeah.
I agree with you that I don't think it's the first one to jump right into. I think watching Barber or watching Long Beach or any of the more traditional IndyCar Grand Prix that just have your qualifying and your race is probably the best point of entry to watch the series.
Yeah. I feel like if you are a motorsport fan that likes a lot of drama and a lot of crashes and stuff like that, start off with a street circuit. But if you like your more traditional racing, wheel-to-wheel battles, overtakes and strategy that plays into it, then I think your more normal road courses like your Barber, like your, is it Mid-Ohio is a normal one as well.
Mm-hmm.
Those sort of tracks is maybe like a good place to jump on, I'd say.
Faux show.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Moving on, we got a race this weekend. We got two races, actually. We have the IndyCar season finale, which is in Nashville at the Nashville Super Speedway. But the one we're going to talk about right now is the one and only Azerbaijan Grand Prix, formerly known in 2016 as the European Grand Prix, which settled once and for all that Azerbaijan was indeed in Europe.
It's always been in Europe. Anyone who watches Eurovision, they know. Azerbaijan, always a staple of Eurovision.
Still a relatively new circuit. While it was the European Grand Prix in 2016, I believe the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, you know, they skipped 2020 because of COVID. It's only been run 6 times, right?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, 2016. Ever since then, of course, yeah, missed out 2020.
It is.
Only ever had one driver win it twice.
And that is checking my notes.
Yes, it is.
Sergio Perez.
Is that in the notes?
No.
Okay.
That's why I said checking my notes.
Okay. I thought you were like, oh yeah, you're reading my notes, are you? Hey, that's my
I don't have like checker. A secret notes that you can't see. We're looking at the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay, the Oscar Piastri thing I hid from you. But other than that, I did not I don't have secret notes that you can't see. But yes, Sergio Perez is the only driver to win this the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. More than once, the Street King. It's a weird circuit. Yep. It's a street circuit. If you look at the outline, it kind of looks like a wrench. It has an incredibly long start-finish straight. It just also is a circuit that historically does not provide a lot of overtakes. We had 27 overtakes in 2021, 23 overtakes in 2022, and 23 overtakes in 2023. It also, I don't know exactly how the tires are going to adjust to this year. Last year, it did not seem to be a circuit that lent to a lot of tire degradation. And it seemed like most of those cars could have driven the entire race without a pit stop if it wasn't a rule that they had to do a pit stop and change a compound. As you saw when Esteban Ocon drove the entire race and pitted on like the second to last lap because he had to and didn't want to get disqualified. I feel like strategy is really not a big factor here unless we get weather.
Yeah, honestly, Azerbaijan, and I think the simple way to put it for me, it's never been a track that I'm like, oh, yes, this is going to be a banger. This is always a banger race. It's always great. Azerbaijan is only a good race if there's a safety car. And this doesn't always guarantee it is a good race after a safety car, because last year had a safety car due to Nyck de Vries crashing out, brought out the safety car, and then allowed everyone to make that pit stop, as you alluded to take them till pretty much the end of the race. And that was boring and awful to see. And yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that overtakes don't always make it exciting, but battles do. And there wasn't really any of that either. It wasn't like there was people out of position. No, everybody could just make their pit stop, and then there was no strategy till the end of the race, and everybody just extended the gaps between each other, and there was no fights going on. It was very, very dull and boring. So yeah, 2017, fantastic race. Daniel Ricciardo won the 2017 Grand Prix. Really, really fun and exciting. And one thing that definitely had was lots of safety cars and lots of incidents. And that's just what Baku can provide, because it's got such a long start finish straight that you have to wait and go till right up until the safety car restart line, but then all the other cars are right behind you, can slipstream off you, and then it's just a lot of cars so compacted into that turn one when that happens. So I feel like it's just going to be a bit of a dull race unless we have some sort of incident, which can easily happen because it's a very tight circuit.
Right. And I remember last year, Checo, of course, won the race, and you had Max Verstappen about 2 seconds behind in P2, but there weren't a lot of opportunities for him to overtake. And then you had Charles Leclerc like 20 seconds behind Max on this P3 island, because behind him was Fernando Alonso like another 20 seconds behind him. So it, with the exception of the safety car that you referenced, it was rather uneventful. So I hope we get a little bit more action than we did last year. Azerbaijan, very interesting country. Baku, a city rich with history. Hayden, did you know that Baku has a museum dedicated to miniature books?
Miniature books?
Yeah.
Mr. Men and Little Miss books? Because they're quite miniature. They're quite small.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Smaller than that. You don't know what Mr. Men and Little Miss books are? Really? I didn't think that was just an English thing. I thought that was like a worldwide thing.
Is that
like Mr. Bump, Mr. Tickle?
No idea what you're talking about.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I am shocked there, because that I don't think that's something that you just generally don't know compared to the rest of the world. I think that might just be an English thing.
Maybe
that
it
I
is.
Thought was worldwide.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm shocked. Basically, they're very small children's books.
Are there any books that you would love to see miniature?
Any books? I mean, the Lord of the Rings saga is probably quite a big one. Need to be shrunken down a little bit. Game of Thrones, that's quite a big book series. Wheel of Time as well. Pretty sure they're quite chunky. But let's shorten them down a little bit.
The three sets of the 2023 F1 regulations are 338 pages. Could you imagine trying to go through that rule book if it was miniature?
How miniature are we talking? Like, compared to a hand, where would that fit?
I think that's what they're supposed to be. I think they're supposed to be like fit in the palm of your hand. I don't know. I didn't do that much research. I just Googled fun facts about Baku, all right? I didn't do that much of a deep dive.
You telling me you didn't order miniature books from Baku? This is not good enough.
Listen, I did the bare minimum here, all right? I was tired last night when I made this outline. I also wrote down the fact that, hey, Hayden, did you know that Baku has a museum dedicated to carpets?
Right, what doesn't it have a museum dedicated to at this point? Is it because people in Baku, they like to read their miniature books on carpets, so therefore they need to put two and two together?
I hope that the Museum of Miniature Books and the Museum of Carpets have formed a partnership because they realize that they can have some vertical integration here. Buy a miniature book, buy a carpet, sit on the carpet, read the miniature book. Everyone's happy.
Bish, bash, bosh. What other fun facts have you got?
Bingo,
for us,
bingo,
then?
Bongo. Famous. I looked up famous people from Azerbaijan, and I didn't recognize any of the names. So like, they just must be Azerbaijan famous, or maybe like Eastern Europe, Eurasian famous.
Yeah.
However, the most famous Azerbaijanis I found were Elle and Nikki from the 2011 Eurovision contest. Are you familiar? You watch Eurovision. Are you familiar
I
with
watch Eurovision,
Elle and Nikki?
Yeah, but I can't remember their entry from 2011. I'll be completely honest
with you. If you've never heard the song Running Scared, let me tell you, Hayden, it's a bop.
Running Scared.
The chemistry that Elle and Nikki have is just unbelievable. It's a bop, or an Azerbaijani, it's a bop is Yashi Mani Dear. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Right, I'm gonna get up the Eurovision entry for 2011 and
just Google Elle and Nikki Running Scared, and you know, you and your significant other can just vibe out to it after this.
Yeah, I can hear it now. Yeah, right. I'm running. I'm scared tonight. Let's go. This is actually what I sing to you, to be honest. But you don't return it. So
you
sad.
You and your significant other can put on headphones and just dance in the streets. Speaking of streets, are we going to see the return of the Street King, aka Checo Perez, in Baku this weekend?
I hope so, for one reason, and it would be very, very funny if, you know, Red Bull are having all these issues and they are struggling, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we see it's Checo Perez who wins the race, but Max is still having, you know, the issues that he had last week and the Checo issues that he's had for the whole season, pretty much, mm-hmm. and finishes in around that P7, P6, P5 area.
Yeah.
And Checo's just like, that's right, I'm the man. This is my house, man. This is my house now. And would also give us 8 different winners this season. So, you know, regardless of whether Red Bull are good or not, would be quite cool to see him take the victory to give us 8 different winners in the season, because I think that's always cool when you have a new one, which is quite shocking.
Our race winners are all from the top 4 constructors, and the only person we're missing is Checo.
Mm, exactly. But I feel like he's missed the bus. I feel like Red Bull is a car right now that it's going to be very difficult for them to get a fair few race wins, especially with Perez, who has struggled with that car more than Max, of course, has. But you never know. Baku can throw up some strange results. The 2017 podium, I'm pretty sure, was Ricardo Bottas. Ricardo in a Red Bull, Bottas in the Williams, or the Merc. Was he the Merc then? 2017 was in the Merc. And then Lance Stroll got a podium as well in that 2017 season.
Yeah.
Perez has got a fair few podiums before he moved over to Red Bull when he was in his Force India days.
/ Racing Point, yeah.
Yeah, Baku can throw up a few incidents and a few surprise results. So it's never out of the question, especially a race like Baku.
Yeah, we had Checo had 4 podiums at the beginning of the season, and it looked like he has not been on the podium since China. So I
don't even know if he's got the top 5 since China, to be fair.
Yeah. But I would love to see the return of the Street King. I would love to see 8 race winners. However, mm-hmm. he is not in my top 5 predictions, which I feel like we should go into right now. Do you want to go
You can go first.
Should we count backwards?
Yes.
Okay. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Oh, do you want me to do my predictions backwards now? Okay.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, I reckon we do those as well. Yeah.
Okay. So P5, I have George Russell. P4, Lewis Hamilton. And that's strictly for selfish reasons, because I have them in my grid rival league and I have them both signed to a 5 race contract. And I really I have Mercedes as my constructor. I desperately need Mercedes to do well for me to be able to move up in the standings in my grid rival league. Desperately. P3, Max Verstappen. Even though Red Bull's having problems with the cars, I still think Max is going to max, and qualify very well and finish on a podium. I have both McLarens finishing P1, P2. However, I have Lando Norris P2, Oscar Piastri P1.
Ooh,
and Oscar okay. Piastri is going to say, I'm going to try to do this in my best Australian accent. I'm the captain now. Mate.
I don't know. Was that? I don't know.
All right. Yeah. Brisbane, Melbourne, Sydney Opera House.
Very, very good. Right. Okay. I've gone for something quite different. I don't, at the moment, before we've watched any running, I don't know if Mercedes are going to have a car capable of doing well in Baku. They feel like they're a bit worse for wear in the slow speed corners. And, you know, whilst Baku has got that really long straight and has got some quite top end speed areas, it's in terms of cornering ability, it's more those slow speed corners. So I think they're going to struggle with Mercedes. I think Ferrari will be that team in the top five. I'm putting Max P5. I think Red Bull's woes are going to continue. He's going to struggle. So Max P5. Then I'm going to go with Sainz, then Leclerc, then Piastri, then Norris. Seems a bit boring, but I'm going with my head this time.
So Max P5, who's P4?
P4 is Sainz.
P3 is Leclerc.
P3 will be Leclerc. And then P2 will be a Piastri. P1 will be Lando.
I still think Logan Sargeant's best moment in Formula One was when he rated the McDonald's stuff. He did blind rankings for McDonald's menu items.
Yes.
And said P last, which I thought was very funny. I never heard anyone say P last before.
And, well, he's just used to it a lot, isn't he?
Oh, come on. Don't kick a man when he's down. Too soon.
I'm sorry. One thing I have to say is that Baku did not get the memo. I don't know if you've seen the picture from the Baku circuit, but when they've got around the circuit on the race weekend, they have obviously like next to the lampposts on street circuits, they have flags around that are advertisement for Baku. So one side it's like Baku City Circuit Grand Prix, whatever, with the dates that it is, and then the other side it's got a driver, and one of those drivers was Logan Sargeant. He is there at the Grand Prix still. They haven't got the memo.
Someone needs to print out driving Franco Colapinto's face and just tape his face onto Logan Sargeant's body.
Oh my god. The big sticker, just yeah. Slap it on there.
Yeah, a fat head or whatever those things are called that you order for your walls. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're on about. Yeah. I know what you're on about. There was a really we're going off tangent. It's the end of the podcast, so if you want to tune out. But I'm going off tangent here. There's a great kids show when I was growing up called Dick and Dom in the Bungalow, and they played a game where they go out into the streets and would have stickers of their face. And we'll just pop them on backs of people and not get noticed and have to take it in turns. And with every turn, the sticker would get larger until you'd have them that would be like the size of their torso. It would be that big. And they're just walking up behind people being like, oh, how much for those there? And just slyly put them on the back and be like, oh, thank you very much. Have a nice day. And then just walk off and just leave it on their backs. And that's what I'm imagining right now.
Hey, Dick and Dom in the Bungalow sounds like a porno.
Well, I mean, it was a kid's show, so let's hope not. Otherwise, they are going to be on some sort of register.
I love that. Cool. Anything else?
I think that is going to be a perfect way to wrap up. If you pardon the pun. Right. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to this week's podcast. Hopefully, Baku is an absolute banger. There's chaos, there's controversy, and we have exciting racing around there. And who knows, maybe even a new race winner for this season. Thank you, as always, James, for jumping on the podcast with me. And make sure you go follow James on his social channels. Follow me as well. And make sure you're following on whatever audio platform you are currently listening to right now. Check out all of the WTF1's official social channels too. And we will see you after Baku to talk all about whatever happens in the race. Enjoy it, and we'll see you after that. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.